Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Grant and Danny, welcoming you back on The Fan. We're taking you up to 6:30 this evening in Nationals baseball. The Detroit Tigers are in town. By the way, the Tigers, I saw a stat a few minutes ago online. In terms of stuff and velocity, lacking in their pitching staff.
Interesting.
98-plus mile-per-hour fastballs this season by team. Tigers, third fewest in baseball, just 24 of them thrown. Only the Red Sox and the Rockies have fewer 98-mile-an-hour fastballs. The Nats are kind of middle of the pack, by the way. They've thrown almost 170 of them this year. The Chicago White Sox, as a staff, almost 400 fastballs at 98 miles an hour. The Reds, the Cardinals, the Phillies, the Royals up near the top. Now, none of those teams are all that good, but it speaks to, you know, just kind of what you're looking for.
The organizational philosophy there, you can see it.
So you'll see the Tigers in town. Rare trip, as you mentioned earlier, to Nats Park. They have not been here since Scherzer threw 20 strikeout ball years ago. What year was that?
2016.
7 years ago.
Quirky schedule stuff, too. I don't know. I thought we're like, yeah, we're all going to play each other. And then, like, they haven't been here in 7 years. I don't know, man. That was great, though. I mean, that was an excellent Tigers lineup back in the day at that point that
really
Max
good.
Shoved it on.
106.7, The Fan just posted. They wrote up my story about Ben Revere being in my backseat. That's hilarious. Our guy, Lou DiPietro. Lou is a machine, by the way. He just cranking out content. But he just, he wrote up the story of the time where Ben Revere
jumped in
the back of my Toyota Celica.
That's so funny.
Good times had by all.
Like, a great trivia question is, has Ben Revere been in Grant's Toyota Celica? And the answer is yes.
You wouldn't think so.
You wouldn't think so.
But he actually has. I miss that Toyota Celica. You know, it was the high school car you get.
No, of course,
like a body kit.
Yeah.
You watch Fast and the Furious once. Speaking of which, I think I'm going to go tonight.
It's out?
Yeah.
How did they get – it's going to sound like I'm joking, and I'm not.
We'll get to the phones. We're going to talk about –
Sorry, everybody.
Jason Wright.
Brie Larson's in this one?
Yeah, man. The cast of this movie.
How did they do that?
Do what exactly?
Okay. So normally when a franchise has gone on for a while.
Yes.
Okay. Like this
hasn't gone on that long. This is the 10th.
That's a pretty big set of movies.
Right.
Yeah. It's the cast starts to get a little bit less. If that makes sense. Like it's like,
no.
Yeah, I'm probably not doing this one again.
They are gaining steam.
They gain steam. How are they doing that? Like
because
The Rock's done one. Jason Statham did one.
All these movies make hundreds of millions of dollars. It's still a lot of the same crew. It's Vin Diesel and his cast of characters.
Mm-hmm. Michelle but Rodriguez is in it.
Statham,
just quipping.
You name a wrestler like who's the ICU guy?
John Cena's in it.
It's amazing the cast. But I'm going to see it tonight. I will give you a full report on Monday. Because I'm jacked up.
They're too fast.
Now, this is the 10th, correct?
Fast 10.
I believe I saw a story from the premiere overseas somewhere where Vin Diesel said that this was originally supposed to be considered the last. Now he's saying this is part one of a three-part series.
So originally, the rumor was there was going to be one more, so they'd get to 11. And then on the red carpet, he made it known that they have three in the hopper, basically.
This is unbelievable.
So we're at least going to go to 12. The thought is maybe 13. It's great news.
They're just so fast.
It's so good,
and they're so angry.
We're jumping out of airplanes. We're fighting on the sun. We're doing all kinds of stuff.
Fighting on the sun. But somebody would jump out of an airplane, and there's a car also.
Correct.
Have you seen the viral thread where somebody was like, what is the point in the Fast and Furious series where it left all reality? And everybody just posts like their craziest clip of something crazy from the movie, like Ludacris and Tyrese blasting off into space in a car
right
that has rockets attached to it, and somehow they get back to Earth
somehow it happened. I don't know when, because the first couple were more grounded, I would say. Just racing cars. I mean, not every one of the scenes in every one of the movies was something that could happen to Danny or me.
Right, they were way more realistic.
But by a handful of movies in, we knew what we were getting. And tonight, me and a few hundred of my closest friends will be sitting in the theater soaking it up.
There's a clip, I don't know which one it is, that I've actually seen hundreds of times. I mean, among like the 10 funniest improv moments in movie history. So I don't know what movie this one's from. It's one of the Fast and Furious. What's the guy's name? Really handsome guy?
Vin Diesel?
Black dude? No. Tyson? Is it that guy?
Tyrese.
So it's Tyrese, yeah. Tyrese. The Rock, who's enormous and
Tyrese
like,
Gibson.
Works out so incredibly much and yeah. like has like a tiny tank top that barely fits him. He's like, uh-oh, better hide your baby oil. And The Rock responds, better hide your big-ass forehead. And Ludacris spits out a beverage because right. he wasn't ready for it. I've seen that 1,000 times.
These dudes just make these movies and have so much fun.
Better hide that big-ass forehead.
So some of your cast real quick.
Yeah.
Vin Diesel, Jason Statham, Tyrese Gibson, Ludacris, Jordana Brewster, Michelle Rodriguez still in
always.
Him. Charlize Theron.
Come on.
Was like a superstar. She's been in the last 3 or 4.
Has she really?
Yes. Brie Larson, Jason Momoa.
Jason Momoa?
Yeah, he's the bad guy. He's like the main villain in this movie.
How do they get these people?
Because they make all the money. I'm trying to tell you. You're just not listening.
But do they still, though? People are still doing it?
This movie will make $400 million. It's going to be a smashola guy. It's a summer blockbuster. Mm. Everyone's going to go but you. There might be 3 people that don't go.
There'll be a few of us.
Let's go to the phones. 800-636-1067. The question is, Tom Lavero wrote a piece today saying he thinks the Commanders need to move on from Jason Wright when the Josh Harris group gets here. Do you agree with that? And if you just want to kind of give an assessment on how Wright's done, you can do that. Or are you on my side of it, which is, look, you had an owner who made your job impossible. No team president would have thrived in this situation. Let's see what he's capable of in an actual decent cultural setup. Chris, what's up? Hyattsville, how you doing?
I'm good. By the way, Tokyo Drift is the best one.
Oh, what a hot
That's inflammatory. Grant's mad, Chris.
I don't even count that as one of the series. That's the little step.
Well, that's what's great about it, because it takes place in a separate dimension. By the way, can we get Grant some chamomile tea with some eucalyptus or some honey or something?
You know
and a couple
cups,
of Ricolas?
You know how many cups of hot beverage I've had?
So,
since
Chris,
I got here?
You know our guy Grant. He doesn't do hot liquid. Like, it's not like he won't do coffee, he won't drink tea. He knows, and he's fighting it. He's fighting the good fight over there. He's probably, have you had what, 4 mugs of tea today?
At least.
Yeah.
It's getting worse, though.
Maybe like he can get some scissor, like Lil Wayne or something. Up until today, I really could not care less about the future of Jason Wright until Tom Lavero wrote an article. Now I am Team Jason. I am all about him. I hope he is the most successful team president, PR guy in the history of the NFL, because Tom Lavero is seriously the worst writer in DC sports history. He's like, if he was a television character, he'd be a mashup of Barney from The Simpsons and Cliff Clavin without the laughs. Okay? This guy has made an entire career criticizing people who are much greater than him, who have accomplished much more, and never once admits when he's made a mistake. The biggest beef I have with him is the way he treated the Lerners the entire time Ted Lerner was alive, calling them sheep, suggesting that they should sign all these players who, by the way, most of them haven't performed well after they left Washington. He's a blowhard. His opinions are best left for Shelley's back room, and that's it.
Shelley's back room. So, I mean, look, the animosity for Lavero, it sounds like you got a personal thing, you're not a fan, whatever. Not really what's on the table here. I mean, the take is Jason Wright has not done a good enough job to keep his gig, he says. You think that's...
I think we've all worked in organizations or places where it was difficult to get things done because the organizational structure was poor or the culture was terrible. And we all know that to be the case in Washington. Yes, he had a couple of unforced errors, but I, to like your point, I'd like to see him get a fresh start without the Damocles of Dan Snyder investigation after investigation or the potential sale of the team hanging over his head.
So thanks for the call.
Appreciate buddy. You, bro.
Here's what I would say. If you're on the stand, Danny, mm-hmm. and I'm trying to, like, convince you of my side,
uh-huh.
I would say to you, would you agree, sir, that Jason Wright's job is one of the most difficult jobs in sports?
It was.
Right, that's what I'm saying.
It was, yes.
And it's, I mean, Dan's technically still the owner right now, mm-hmm. right? So it was. Would you agree that in the pantheon of like years to do that job, pre-name change, summer of 2020, like all the stuff that was going on, scandal, Washington Post stories, investigations, that's as bad of a couple of years where you could do that job as any time in the team's history?
Sure, it was a challenging environment, yes.
I would rest my case there, and I would say, if you were interested in him being your team president, whether the league and Roger Goodell thought he was going to crush it, or Dan Snyder handpicked him, however it worked out, and you thought this guy had a chance to do a great job, then you should absolutely give him the opportunity to see what he can do with a decent ownership group. That would be my case.
It's a reasonable case. My response is, yeah, there's a lot of responsibility there. It's a challenging job. There are lots of people that have challenging jobs, governors, senators, presidents, etc. Nobody goes, oh, well, it's a tough universe to navigate. You're in charge, man. When you're in charge, lots of is expected of you. I know it was tough. I'm very aware that Dan Snyder's a terrible person to work for. I also know that you had more insulation than any employee he's ever had, seemingly, where you were able to tell him the truth when nobody else did for years. You were able to bring him the actual facts of the case when nobody else did. I don't know whether you were Teflon. I don't know whether you were appointed. I don't know whether there was an extra guarantee in your deal. But usually when people talk to him, that way they get fired and sued. But Jason Wright is still surviving, and he's sitting there running Dan down while Dan still technically owns the team. And I'm not ripping Jason for it. I run him down every day.
Sure.
But I'm also not getting paychecks signed by the guy. So to me, you had opportunities to demonstrate, can you get it right the first time? A misstep here or there, we could totally understand it. But when you re-rack things and it was just as bad or worse or whatever, and it's, I like that you own the slip-ups, but it's hard to say this is a good track record. And that, to me, is the point. Now, here's the thing. What's on your side is timing. It is really hard to do all new business stuff in starting July, 15th, like 2 days before training camp starts, to try to get people to buy tickets and merch and everything else. You're pretty much stuck. But Lavero's point, in principle, I think I could see a good case for it.
Yeah, and the penultimate point you just made is why they're not going to do anything.
Right.
It makes no sense to bring someone else in here this late in the game now to try to run the department that Jason Wright runs. I always like to try to kind of present the other side of it.
No, it's reasonable.
Because
yeah.
I'm saying this, my opinion is actually pro-Wright, I guess, in this case.
Mm-hmm.
But the other side of it, too, is, and I want this known, like I think that they have screwed a lot of things up. I do. And if your point is as simple as this is a results business, what are the results? I hear you. I think the Sean Taylor debacles were big. I think 2-2-22 was a significant thing that happened. I hated, I've told Jason this, I hated the public exchange with Scott Abraham. Like, I thought that was just so bad.
I'd forgotten about that, yeah.
That to me was like, that might be the worst thing on his ledger. Now, he might count that as a win, honestly, because maybe he felt like it was an opportunity where he showed that I'm loyal to my guys and players are going to respect me or whatever.
But what he judges it by versus what we do, very
exactly.
different. Yeah.
But for me, that was an L. And there have been some of those. But I'm just grading on a pretty sizable curve here as it pertains to Dan. Why don't I do that with the football operation? Well, I guess technically I kind of am, because I think all these guys should be here for this coming football season. And should get a chance now to see what happens before a decision's made. But also, I just think that the business side is way more tied to Snyder than the football operation has been. Let's go to Russell in Ashburn. Hey, Russell.
Hey, Grant, Danny. So I think you can make the case for Jason to be retained in terms of the timing, the transition to a new ownership, et cetera. You can't do this at the last minute. You could also make the case for the job that he's done or not done. But I'd like to kind of examine one particular angle, and that is that the new ownership group is coming into town, and they're in the business of customer acquisition. They need to woo all the fans, new and old, back into the business.
Yep.
And to, in order to do that, do they want to hitch their wagons to one of the most public-facing executives that the Snyder regime hired? What are the optics? I mean, I would even say that even if he needs two people to pick, to fire and retain the rest of the crew, it needs to be the head of the business operations and maybe the head of, like, communications or PR or whatever. That's who the fans know, the face of the organization, and that represents a moving forward in time, a moving forward into the new era.
It's a really smart call. This is football's a different animal than regular business. We know that. But at the end of the day, you're still selling a product, right? And his point, I think, is dead on in the sense that who's the most public-facing person? Who's, like, his number three over there? Who's the middle manager in charge of season ticket renewals or suite selling and stuff? Nobody knows. Who's the guy that we know? The guy that's on the radio, the guy that's on TV, the guy that's given quotes here, there, and everywhere about everything. He was their savior, right, of the previous regime. He was the new white knight. And we saw Scott McLuhan do it. We saw Brian LaFemina do it. We've seen other guys. He was the guy that everybody trotted out, that everyone got to know. Even if it's symbolic, it's hard to say, yes, we approve of that. I relate to that point a lot.
Herb's in Waldorf. Grant and Danny on the fan. Hey, Herb.
Hey, what's going on, fellas?
Hey, buddy.
First of all, I don't know what that caller was talking about as far as Tokyo Drift being the best one. Fast Five was hands down the best one.
Correct.
And I'm just, I don't care what anybody says.
Well, I honestly think, just so you know, Herb, I think he was trolling me. Because he knows that I've said in the past, I don't even count Tokyo Drift as one of the series. That movie might as well not even have happened. It was just a tree falling in the woods.
It literally was like that one. We have to tie this for Fast 9 or whatever. But that's beside the point.
It didn't even have the cast. We didn't even have Dom Toretto. Nothing matters.
Well, he had Dom at literally the last second.
That's true.
Said, yeah, won a race, and then I got nothing but time. And that's it.
Unless Dom is sitting around with his family drinking Coronas for at least six minutes, it ain't Fast and the Furious.
But to carry on the conversation, I think Jason did the best that he could possibly do. I was at the game when we played the Chiefs and got skunked, and there was nobody in the seats when it was snowing outside. Nobody can recover from that.
Wow.
I was actually there in the trenches with it. So, I mean, if anybody can seriously talk people into actually trying to make this place palatable, Jason has done it. I think he deserves another shot. I mean, you were working with one of the biggest scumbags in the NFL. There's nothing else that you could possibly do, but he's done every single thing that he could do. Name something he's gone through all the scandals and everything, and he still made it out making this place look palatable. I don't know what else you can do.
So I don't know how much I would say, like, the house looks good now or anything. He would be able, if we called him up and he came on the line, he'd be able to point to the areas of growth. Sales are up this percent. Tickets are up this. Merchandise is up that. I think some of that is the name. Like, you have a new logo. You have a new name. You have new jerseys. All that stuff should be up. So I don't know that you get credit for all of that as much as, like, a rebrand is also a good opportunity for a reset in business, not to take completely away from their vision. But I guess my point is, in the same way that I'm saying a lot of the bad stuff I don't care as much about, I'll do the same with any kind of positives. I'm going to call balls and strikes both ways here.
Yeah.
As if to say, the Dan era, you get an incomplete. What happened, that was you with your training wheels on. You'd never been a president before. Your eval starts today on my first day in office. Good luck. We'll make a decision in 365 days. That's how I would do it.
I hear that. It makes a lot of sense. And to me, again, the timing, so this is all a bit moot, right? Like, there's no way.
It's maybe a bit there is, Fred Smoot.
Yeah, maybe there is a way that, you know, you could, if you had some folks in mind already, and you could bring in your army day one and sort of do that if you're the Harris Rails group. But to me, this is basically, it's just hard to say. When you add symbolism, when you add kind of the stink of the previous, and you add in all the missteps where you can't necessarily say, I mean, listen, the stats where you go, hey, it's 15% better or 20% better. Well, then what? Have we seen any figures? Have we seen the before and after? How much of it is people think Dan's selling, so now they bought a T-shirt? I mean, I don't know the answer to any of that stuff, right? I mean, the stats are always kind of increase over this? Well, I don't know what this is. You know what I mean? Like, it's better than it was in 2021. Okay, when there was more apathy than there's ever been. I don't know. It's hard to put feathers in the cap.
Alex Smith said this week that defensive-minded head coaches can make it hard for young quarterbacks to develop and reach their ceiling. Seems relevant here with a young quarterback and a defensive-minded head coach. Let's get into that next and how Eric Bieniemy might be able to factor into that relationship. We're Grant and Danny on The Fan.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Alex Smith, former Washington quarterback, Redskin and football teamer, over his time with DC. Sharp guy, a lot of opinions, now on TV and a nationally renowned analyst. He was on Sirius XM NFL radio and he talked about how much harder it is for a young quarterback to develop in a building run by and in a football culture set by a defensive-minded head coach. This was Alex Smith.
There is a different mentality for my career. When you play for an offensive head coach that wants to light up the scoreboard and outscore the opponent, there's a different mentality you have, especially as a young quarterback versus a defensive head coach, when really the mentality is, hey, don't screw up. Don't turn the ball over. Don't put us in a bad situation. And I can't tell you as a young QB playing in the bright lights, how much that's a huge difference in a mentality and a mindset for a young quarterback, especially if it's a bit rocky to start.
I don't even think this is a sports point, but if someone's telling you, hey, don't mess up as yep. opposed to go do something awesome, like just how you're going to operate is so different.
100%.
Danny. And I have long believed this. I've never really heard someone break it down the way he did on SiriusXM NFL Radio. We'll play another cut for you here in a moment. But I've long thought the relationship between QB and quarterback, we know that it's significant. It's probably the most important in any building. It stands to reason then that you really want to pair that young quarterback with an offensive savant. And the teams that don't are in big trouble. And I find myself, as we sit here, wondering, is Sam Howell going to be really good? Are we sure he's going to breach his ceiling? We look back at North Carolina. He was excellent as his second-to-last season as a passer. He was really good as a rusher his final season. The physical tools are there. Maybe, just maybe, Washington could luck into something here. For him to maximize his potential and get to his apex, it's going to take exceptional coaching. Last year, with an inexperienced guy in Scott Turner, who's no longer an OC, he's helping out with quarterbacks with the Raiders, has essentially taken a demotion. And with Ron Rivera, they weren't able to get more out of Carson Wentz than there was there. They weren't able to elevate Taylor Heinicke than what they got the previous season. I don't think that's a coincidence.
No, it's not. And then when you add in again, Ron Rivera and his MO, what has he done each of the last three seasons? They started out one way, didn't work, or they didn't like it, or whatever, and then they changed their style of play to play defense, punt, run the ball, basically minimize their opportunity to get blown out. Try to be in a one-score game every week, and you take your chances, and you can do okay that way. They've done okay for three straight years. I have no interest in that. But if you're trying to not have the bottom fall out, which has kind of been his MO, then that's exactly what you do. That's the worst thing for the development of a quarterback. I don't do that. The whole point is, can this guy be great? I try to make him great. Now, coaches don't think that way because they think about their own jobs, their own survival, their own ability to kind of hang around. But if the organization is all on the same page, nothing else you're doing matters. It's awesome that Cam Curl's a good player. It's cool they got Emmanuel Forbes in the first round. It's neat that they've got a whole bunch of talent in the secondary, or that we're going to see what Chase Young does this year. Neat. Is your quarterback any good? Wake me up when he is. The whole point is to find one. And you won't really know and give it the ultimate sample unless you do everything you possibly can to support him. That doesn't include Nick Gates and Andrew Wiley, and then you dust your hands off saying, well, my offseason is all done, especially on the offensive side. Thank you very much. No. The best offensive mind, or minds, in this case, they've upgraded in Bieniemy, thank you. But is the offensive line the best it could possibly be? Does he have a running back outlet to throw to regularly? Maybe it's Gibson. Maybe they think he is. I would disagree. Give me three J.D. McKissicks. Are his tight ends top-notch? I would say no. I like some of those guys individually, but have you done everything you possibly can to make sure this guy's successful? And teams that don't somehow wind up at the end going, I don't know why it didn't work out. This quarterback was the bust. It's so bleeping hard. It's just so hard to do. And when you draft one, it is your responsibility to see it through to the nth degree. And then if he fails, now we really know.
It's kind of why the Chargers are pretty baffling when they went and got Brandon Staley. Justin Herbert is the one example, I would say, of recent quarterbacks where a team went and got a defensive-minded head coach to go with an exceptional young talent at QB. And it doesn't seem like it has hindered the quarterback excessively. Now, you can make the case maybe that Herbert could have ascended faster or been better, or maybe they'd be a playoff team if they had more of an offensive emphasis or something. But the organizational structure of the team is still, they're pass happy, they're aggressive. And I would make the case they strategically are immensely flawed. It's a lot of horizontal,
yep,
around the line of scrimmage stuff. They don't really use his arm and push it downfield in the way that they probably should. The Bears last year went out with Justin Fields at quarterback, and they hired a defensive-minded head coach, a D coordinator who came over from Indianapolis and Eberflus, who, again, it just goes against the league trend. Like, if you have a young passer, to me, it's a full stop, end of conversation. I'm not interviewing you if you're not an offensive coordinator who calls plays and has been in and out of quarterback rooms for years and years and years.
The only way that I could do it, and I'm looking at the Chargers as an example, I have no idea about their inner workings. I have no clue how they ran meetings day to day or week to week, or you know who was in charge of what. But Joe Lombardi was their OC. That guy's been in some quarterback rooms. He hung out with a guy named Drew Brees a bleep ton in New Orleans and then ascended to the offensive coordinator role.
Is why the Bieniemy hire here,
yes,
makes me think maybe I can be less nervous now.
So the only way that it works to me is if Brandon Staley's like, I am not messing with you guys. I recognize we've got something special over here. I'm not telling you to check it down a bunch of times and let us run the dang ball and we'll play defense.
But like Smith's point is, when you've got one of these defensive coaches,
yeah,
who tells you don't mess it up. And again, I think the mindset is so important.
I think it's so correct.
When you're trying to win 20-14 rather than going out and you're not trying to score 35 points if you're Ron Rivera.
Right.
So why would you overinvest in your O-line or go add another weapon or go get the tight end that I want or go get an explosive running back to go with your thumpers in the backfield? You're in your mind, we can get to 22 with this group.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to win 22-15 every week. We can get to 22. But teams that have screwed this up and I think have hurt their quarterbacks, like the Bears, Alex Smith's point is you pair that,
yep,
defensive coach with first-time play callers. And that was Scott Turner here. That's Luke Getsy, who I thought did a really good job implementing the run as they went with Fields last year. But as a passer, he certainly hasn't grown. Smith kind of came to this conclusion as they were talking about, the young quarterbacks, the rookie class, and how much more he likes the situation for Bryce Young in Carolina than he likes C.J. Stroud in Houston.
There's a reason why coaches that come from the quarterback room are so sought after as head coaches and coordinators, right? It is a small pool of people that have sat in that pocket and played, or sat in that QB room, or been an offensive coordinator and done passing game and called plays. Like, that entire line that goes straight to a head coach, that's not a big pool of people. And yeah, Robert Saleh, you're a great defensive mind and coordinator, but like, you have no idea how to develop a quarterback. The coordinator you hired had never called plays. Like, so that's a completely different animal. And as much as you think you're prepared to handle that development of a young kid, like, you're just not.
Here's my question I've got, Danny. I was worried about the structure here for young quarterback development in this run first, Rivera-led Marty Party outfit. I think them going and getting Bieniemy is enough to calm my concerns, though. And it has me feeling like maybe they can tap into the best of Howe. Maybe you can help him reach his ceiling. Because my perception, and this is what Smith's talking about, that they don't have the right structure set up to elevate a QB doesn't matter as much if Bieniemy is a very influential and powerful coordinator who's running half the building and is sitting down meeting with Sam Howell for 3 hours every single night. And I think they'll do that now. And you've gone from Turner doing that, who's the first-timer he was just referencing, a la Mike LaFleur with the Jets under Saleh, their Rivera. But now Washington's got a long time, been around championship offense, play-calling coordinator. And I feel better. And I wonder if you guys do too, and just what your confidence is in this regime and in this group being able to maximize Sam Howell. That's really the question. 800-636-1067 on Grant and Danny. I'm at Grant H. Paulson. Danny's at Funny Danny on The Fan.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
There is a different mentality for my career. When you play for an offensive head coach that wants to light up the scoreboard and outscore the opponent, there's a different mentality you have, especially as a young quarterback, versus a defensive head coach, when really the mentality is, hey, don't screw up, don't turn the ball over, Don't put us in a bad situation. And I can't tell you as a young QB playing in the bright lights, how much that's a huge difference in a mentality and a mindset for a young quarterback, especially if it's a bit rocky to start.
That's Alex Smith, Sirius XM NFL Radio. It almost seems like, Danny, if you're a coach and you tell your quarterback, don't make a mistake, we're going to run the ball, you're only going to throw it 18 to 25 times, we're going to play good defense, that the coach is making your life a little bit easier because they're taking a lot off your plate. But also, they're when you only have a few opportunities, you can't screw any of them up.
Right.
And when you're young, when you're inexperienced, you're still going to make the mistakes. You just don't have as many opportunities to balance them out with the really
good flash distinction.
Play.
It's an important distinction you're making here, Grant, because, again, there have been success stories where guys have played for non-offensive-minded head coaches and gone on to great careers. And it's the balance between, we're not asking you to go sling it 50 times. That's not a great recipe for a guy that hadn't thrown NFL passes. I mean, again, my prime example here is Ben Roethlisberger, who, when he first came in, his job was to hand it off to Jerome Bettis. His job was to check it down to Hines Ward a couple times and get off the damn field so they could play some defense. He got a Super Bowl win out of that. Now, as his career progressed, he became prolific as a passer, and more and more responsibility was put on his plate as he started to make more and more money. That's not crazy, right? I mean, you can go through a number of guys that have done that. To me, though, there's a balance between, did you do everything you possibly can to support the young player's development? And an easy shortcut to do that is guy that's been in every quarterback room, offensive-minded head coach, or fully empowered, autonomous, genius offensive coordinator that's going to spend every waking moment with that QB. That's the easiest way to do it.
Let's go to Trace in Hyattsville. What's up, Trace?
Hey, what's up, Commander Danny? Major Paulson.
Hey, man.
Major Tutty Paulson.
Major Tutty Paulson.
Indeed. Danny just said everything I was just going to say. It doesn't really matter. As long as you got the right focus in mind, either a defense coordinator, special team coordinator, or offensive coordinator. I mean, there are people. Like, look at Baltimore. Look at Andy Reid. Look at others. You can have a good coordinator, but it's all about the top down. And ultimately, that's how we need to look at it. Because Rivera right now, he's going on that path of let the enemy take over and do it. We don't know if it will work or not, but that's all that matters. He's trying something different.
I hope so.
I don't think it's going to work. I don't think it's going to work, but it is what it is.
But you bring up the Ravens in Baltimore, as I like to say. And over there in Baltimore, is Lamar Jackson better right now than he was in his first year? How much better? I mean, he was the MVP of the league in 19.
In year two.
I think that was his sophomore season.
It was.
But it was his first full season as a starter because he came in part of the way through or the end of the previous year, if memory serves.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell me decidedly that he has improved, developed, gotten a lot better as a passer from then? I mean, the numbers say he hasn't, for the record. Production has not gone up. My point is, if he was with Andy Reid, would that be the case? You know, if he was with Shane Steichen, Mike McDaniel, Kyle Shanahan, maybe he pays for the fact that because they've got Harbaugh, who's a really good coach, the offensive coordinating door is going to be revolving. It was Roman. Now they got another guy in there. But I think that is a good example of he's awesome. It doesn't mean you can't be a good quarterback. We're talking about getting to your ceiling and maximizing your potential. But my whole point is, with Bieniemy here, I have a lot more hope that Hal can do that and a lot more confidence because you got a not just a grown-up in the room, you've got an offensive thinker in the room. Let's go to Ron in D.C. How are you?
Hey, fellas. How's it going?
Hey, man.
I'm of the opinion that Ron is not an idiot. Ron is a guy who understands the situation. He brought in Eric Bieniemy. He has an offense that I believe that if you look at Kansas City's offense, it's very much RPO based. And you see that Howell came from a system that was very similar. So I really believe that he has chose Bieniemy because he wants Howell to succeed. This is not an offense that's made for Jacoby Brissett. It's made for Sam Howell. And I believe he can have success. This is the first time I really believe since Ron Rivera has been here that he has a plan that actually could work at quarterback.
Appreciate you, dude. I hope so. I'm just not as optimistic as most people are. I've got this.
Well, but you got to admit he's right when he says we've got a plan that could work at quarterback. He didn't say it will. Like, yeah, this might work out.
Well, sure. I mean, I'm in favor of the plan. I actually want the plan executed. Like, I know that maybe I'm on an island with my fears, but I know that I'm not. Well, maybe I'm not alone on an island. I know enough people say, like, what has Ron Rivera done in recent samples? Now apply it to this case. Will he do the same thing? I hope not. I hope he basically doesn't bother Eric Bieniemy once like during any meeting, anything else. I don't want him to talk philosophy. Please don't poison Bieniemy's mind with any of your Mesozoic nonsense. Let him be Eric Bieniemy, which results in offense.
We need to make, at some point, a bet on starts for Jacoby Brissett when Sam Howell is healthy. At some point, we need to do that.
Mm-hmm.
I think that would be fun for the show because your team, we're going to see a bunch of Jacoby Brissett.
Oh, yes.
I think if we do, it's just because Howell's not available. But one way or the other, if he plays and Howell's healthy, I think that's the end of the road for Rivera, so I have a hard time believing he'd go that way unless he just thinks, oh, we can win 10 games and win a playoff game with Jacoby and it'll save my job. But I can't see it. But let's look ahead to what is going to be a great weekend in sports nationally and a fun weekend at Nats Park locally next on Grant and Danny here on The Fan.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey. T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.